Hello, listeners. It's been some time since my last episode. Thank you for waiting. Today, I reward your patience by presenting your guest co-host for today, Kate from Darwin Naturopathics. I first met Kate when I set out on my own preconception journey almost 3 years ago now, to the month actually, and made the very smart decision to book an appointment with her. I think the information she provided me with helped set me up for a great pregnancy, birth, and postpartum with my son Max, who is now almost two. So today I've invited her along to share some of her little golden nuggets of information about all things nutrition and the perinatal period. I hope you enjoy. Hi, Kate. Welcome to the Perinatal Space podcast. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks, Amanda.
That's good. Kate, I'm really glad that we've both finally tracked each other down and have an opportunity to chat about some information that you have to pass on to our listeners. We've been trying for a little while and I'm glad that we've finally made it work.
Yeah,
cool. So I just want to introduce you to our guests, to our listeners. And we just had, you provided me with a few talking points before we hit record today. And one of the many things that I love about you, but one of the things that I love the most is how humble you are. And one of the talking points that you sent through was just literally a bit about yourself, that you're a mum, a business owner, and a naturopath. And I'd love to unpack each of those things with you, you know, over many hours individually, because they're all so big. But today, what you're going to provide our listeners with is some information about the naturopathy side of things. And in particular, with a focus on, because I know it's really important to you to focus on nutrition as a part of that. So we're going to be talking about pregnancy, postpartum, in particular, the first 40 days and why that time is so crucial and often referred to as the fourth trimester. And we're going to be talking about multivitamins, pregnancy multivitamins as well. So yeah, a bit to get through, but I know that you've got a lot to share there for us. So, Kate, I just wanted to, we've had lots of opportunities to chat before, and I know that something you're quite passionate about, as am I, is that, you know, mums are already doing it tough, but far too tough in some instances. And I guess that what we talk about today is, you know, just really doing what you can to try and support yourself and your growing baby as much as possible, but without putting too much pressure on yourself. Because I really like the phrase that I've heard recently, that yes, you can have it all, but you can't do it all. And I think that help is really important for mums at this stage perinatally in their lives, and not to feel like they've got to take everything on board. So, do you have anything to add about that?
Yeah, I think that's really important. And I think it comes with being a mum, is that you do want to provide the absolute best and everything for your child. But it's really sometimes not possible if you've got terrible morning sickness and the only thing that you can eat is toast. We'd rather you just eat toast than worry about getting your nutrition in later. So it's all just about being realistic for your circumstances and not putting too much pressure on yourself and just doing the best that you can
with your job. Awesome. Definitely. And when you're doing the best you can with what you've got, to also be kind to yourself whilst doing it.
That's exactly right. Yep. Cool. Mum guilt is a very big thing that we see a lot of in our clinic. And I think that educating mums and how to identify that they might be getting that mum guilt unnecessarily, I think is pretty important also.
Yeah, good. I think that's a really important thing that can sometimes be a bit of a perhaps an unintentional offshoot of your practice, is that you can, when women do seek out professional services, often I would imagine, and perhaps you can speak a little bit more to this, but that they find themselves walking out the door with perhaps a little bit more than what they, you know, the practical things that they perhaps came for. And I think, yeah, just that clarity and that you know, that outside perspective, reminding people, you know, of what's actually happening can be really, really beneficial.
Yeah, exactly. I could give a patient the most absolutely amazing prescription, but it's not doable. So we need to kind of work with that patient and then identify what's going to be absolutely most important and achievable. If you're just setting them up with too many things, you're just setting them up to fail and feel worse in the long run. So it's about being realistic.
Cool. All right. Well, with all of that in mind, why don't we jump into our first of the 3 points that we're going to talk about in this short, sharp podcast today? It may be short and sharp. Who knows? We may go down a few Robert Warrens and get a bit lost. But pregnancy, yeah, all things pregnancy and nutrition. What can you tell us?
Yeah. So what we do know is that our nutrients do change from trimester to trimester, and this is generally because different parts of the baby are developing at different times. So in the first trimester, we definitely know that folate is the most important, and we know that this is to prevent those neural tube defects, and there's been loads and loads of studies done on this to show that you want to have some good amount of folate in that first trimester and almost going halfway through your second trimester, just to help that neural tube close over and prevent any defects at that spine as well. So that's the one that's kind of the most researched, and we do absolutely stress the importance of that. We totally agree that every pregnant woman should be on that, but we like to let everyone know that ideally you want to take that with some B12 as well, because B12 helps to absorb your folate as well. So it's the, all the B vitamins all tend to work together, so B12 is another great one to have in combination.
Yeah.
And iodine is almost becoming the new folate in kind of obstetricians' eyes. It's the second most important, and it's so important for helping that baby's brain development. It's really important for learning and motor skills, and it can help to prevent hearing difficulties as well. So iodine can be found in basically anything from the sea, so fish, seaweed, like, you know, like the nori wraps, what is found around sushi, miso paste, iodized, like a sea salt, shellfish, these kind of things can be really rich in iodine. But it's probably one thing that I would say between your iodine and your folate that you're not going to get quite enough from your diet. It's one thing that I would be saying that you should be supplementing. And when I was pregnant, one of the first things that my GP said to me was, are you taking a pregnancy multi? And that's pretty standard across the board, that they'll try and confirm that everyone is taking some kind of folate as a minimum, if not iodine.
Great. Yeah, I mean, one of the things that constantly astounds me, and I guess is always evolving, is, you know, is the scientific research which goes into what's involved in growing a baby. And I guess it's really great that, you know, these are things that we know, and that we know that we can do to, you know, grow the best little baby possible.
Yeah, one of my favorites is zinc. Zinc is really important for that replication of DNA, so it's so important for that growth process. It's really good for immunity as well, so helping to prevent infections, but it's also proven to help shorten the labor and prevent preemie births. And we do know that babies that have good amounts of zinc cry less, and they're a little bit easier to settle as well, so it just helps have a nicer transition into that postpartum stage.
So with zinc, Kate, are you talking about supplements again, or what, where do you get zinc from in our diet?
So zinc will be in fish, lean red meats, sunflower seeds, pumpkin seeds, almonds, those kind of things. Generally, if you're having a pregnancy multi, then it will have some amount of zinc in there. Ideally, we want you to be having around 30 milligrams of zinc per day in the pregnancy.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. All right. So lots and lots of talk about, the different, sort of nutrients that are required especially in that first trimester. What are some other kind of nutritional or nutrient things that people can consider with pregnancy?
Yeah, so your other main ones are going to be your omega-3, in particular DHA, calcium, and vitamin D. So a vitamin D can be routinely tested from your GP. You get one bog pill test a year, so that's always a good one to get checked. Vitamin D comes from the sun, but you would be surprised how many people in Darwin are still very vitamin D deficient.
Or hiding from the humidity, I guess.
Yeah, definitely. It helps with better birth weights. It helps with immunity. It helps to prevent rickets. But obviously, vitamin D is really important for that skeleton production in correlation to that calcium. So calcium definitely comes from dairy. But dairy doesn't, when you actually look into how much is in it, it doesn't actually have that much calcium in it. Some of your other sources can be tahini. Tahini has loads. So tahini is ground sesame seeds. This can be added to smoothies or energy balls or like a hummus dip. It's also found a lot in like green leafy veggies and almonds as well as some really good sources.
Interesting. Okay, so the fact that, you know, some food, some dairy products may actually contain less calcium than some of these other products that you're talking about.
Yeah, when we're looking at 100 mils of milk, there's only 112 milligrams of calcium in there. But when we're looking at 100 grams of tahini, there's over 1,100 milligrams of calcium.
Wow.
In that amount. So huge, huge amounts from some plant-based sources as well.
Yeah. And I guess, Kate, by, you know, if a woman comes along to have an appointment with yourself or perhaps if they're not living in Darwin, seeking out another naturopath, these are kinds of, I guess, the little nuggets of information that you can find out that, you know, maybe there are some quick, easy, small swaps that you can make to kind of boost the food, the nutrients that you're getting from the food that's in your diet. Because I know that we've spoken about this before, you're quite passionate about, I guess, you know, doing the best you can with your diet. And then I guess, you know, supplements are called supplements because that's exactly what they're meant to do, right?
Definitely. They're supplementing the diet and helping you to get to that therapeutic doses.
I know that, so just another, because I did visit you when I was pregnant with my son who's turning two in a couple of weeks, but it's crazy as it might sound, it's just these little nuggets of information I think that you find from visiting professionals such as yourself, because I don't think that I would have figured this out on my own. But probably the best piece of advice during pregnancy that I got from you was to have some crackers beside the bed before you step out of bed to just kind of ease that morning sickness a little bit. And I think that really worked wonders, because I certainly noticed if there were no crackers beside the bed, the difference. What other kind, are there any other kinds of little nuggets of information during pregnancy that people report back on that they, you know, they really find are useful?
I like the Tic Tacs in the handbag or the Mentos in the handbag. Generally morning sickness can be a lot to do with your blood sugars dropping. So that's why eating a cracker before you're getting out of bed can just help to boost that blood sugars a little bit. So having some Tic Tacs or some Mentos, kind of a double-edged sword. It's got that little bit of sugar in there to help keep those blood sugars up, but it's also got some peppermint oil in there, which we know is anti-emetic. So it helps with nausea and feeling sick.
Yeah. So pep, interesting. I didn't know. I knew that ginger, because I'm I suffer horribly from motion sickness. Peppermint, also useful just in the same way that ginger is for that problem, is it?
Yeah, definitely. We use them both interchangeable. Depending on the person, I love peppermint, but not a huge fan of ginger. And they both do have very energetic properties as well. So if you run hot, you're a really hot person, and you find having ginger just gives you sweats, it's too hot, you'd be better off with peppermint. But if you're a person, if I have peppermint, I feel my bones feel cold, it really chills me. But either work just as well as each other.
Interesting. Good to have the option, I guess, as you said, you know, different horses for different courses kind of thing.
And you can mix them together in a tea, herbal tea, and take them both together. You have no overdose on those.
Cool. Good to know. Kate, is there anything else that you wanted to talk about in regards to kind of that process? So we've spoken a lot about, I guess, the nutrients that you can get from the foods in which you eat and the kinds of supplements that are really ideal. I know that there's a whole big bit that you want to kind of focus on with talking about multivitamins. Is there any other pregnancy stuff to go through before we talk about multivitamins?
I guess two other nutrients just to kind of keep in your mind as well is iron and fish oil. So iron is one that we definitely like to get you checked, your blood levels checked, because it's something that you don't want it too low or you don't want it too high either. Some of the most popular over-the-counter products have so much iron in them that you can't actually absorb much of it at all. And it just stays in the gut. It can make you feel sick. I have a lot of patients that come in feeling sick and it's just literally their multivitamins they are taking. And it can be too much. So it causes a lot of constipation and a lot of gut upsets as well. So iron is one that we definitely recommend that you don't be taking unless you're getting your blood levels checked, because you either could have low iron, but you could also have high irons. Condition called hemochromatosis, which is a genetic condition where your body stores too much iron, and it's becoming very popular. I'm seeing it a lot in my patients, and we're needing to find them iron-free multivitamins because some of the major over-the-counter ones have just got way too much iron for those people.
So, Kate, is it entirely possible for a small percentage of the population that if they do have that problem, that maybe they wouldn't have any, that therefore even during pregnancy they might not need a supplement?
They might not need a multi, but I'd still definitely be looking at your iodine and your folate and your fish oil as well.
Okay, cool. So that was iron, and did we miss, was there another one or did you cover that off? Oh, that was the fish oil.
Yeah, so the fish oil, which is probably one of my other favorites, or they're all my favorite. But this is really important for the baby's brain development, their eye health, their IQ development, preventing depression in the baby, helping with their memory. It's really good for that mum brain as well. Our brains are made up of 75% DHA, which is a component in the fish oil. So when you're building a baby, you need to have lots of DHA in your diet, which comes from all your oily fish like mackerel, salmon, herring, tuna, sardines, mainly oily fish. It's not so much found in like flax seeds and nuts and seeds. But there is some in walnut oil actually. And it's really, when you're growing this baby, your body always prioritizes the baby first. So whatever nutrients you have get put to the baby first and you get the leftovers. In breastfeeding, it's the opposite. The mum gets supported first and whatever's left over gets put into the breast milk.
Okay.
So during your pregnancy, if you're not consuming enough DHA, then your body will start removing it from your brain to put to the baby. And that can be one of those causes of when you find yourself doing really silly things in pregnancy, is that you really need to have some DHA present. The baby's brain does rapidly keep growing in the first few months of life. So we will talk about DHA as well when we talk a little bit about the postpartum care as well.
Okay, cool. So yeah, I guess it's a, you know, we might be talking about these things kind of in isolation, talking about pregnancy and postpartum, but, you know, not surprisingly, really, it's really about a long game, isn't it? You know, doing one thing in pregnancy will also have impacts for after birth and probably during birth as well, I would imagine.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And they do all work together and synergistically. So for the long term as well. Yeah.
Cool.
The supplements that we like to use are really high dose as well. So they are a little bit strong, but we use prescription ones here. We don't use any of the over-the-counter ones. We like to look at them as that holistic view of what you're eating in your diet, what are your gut health like, how are you absorbing these products. Some of them, and this is what we're training to know, is to look at them and say, all right, well, does this actually have enough in the dosing? Is there enough in here? And are any of these minerals going to be competing? So some of the popular over-the-counter products will have iron and zinc and calcium and iodine, where all the minerals can compete for absorption with each other. So just because it's saying on the packet, this is how much is in here, doesn't mean that's how much you're going to absorb as well.
Yeah, that's interesting. So very much, I guess, the benefit of seeing someone like yourself, Kate, is that it's you look at the individual, the information that's pertinent to that individual and how perhaps they may absorb, how well or how little they may absorb of what it is that they're getting.
Yeah, that's correct. We have a few different pregnancy multis here, and everyone's different. So we can't put everyone into a one multi fits everyone because, yeah, everyone is different.
Mm. Yeah. Okay, so I guess kind of we're there already, and I know you've got a bit more to talk about with these multivitamins, and I think that one of the things you've already touched on, but, you know, I think when I hear women find out this information, you know, from you in seminars and things that you've done, it's always a little bit shocking. But that thing that, you know, sometimes they can have too much and then it causes you're not absorbing it, and instead it's causing you, is it gut inflammation if you have too much, was it iron?
Yeah, you can only absorb about 25 to 30 milligrams of iron in one go. Mm-hmm. This is going off the top of my head, but I won't name brands, but one of the most common ones I think has about 60 milligrams. So it's just too much. You can't possibly absorb it in one go, and mm-hmm. the rest of it just stays in the gut and it creates inflammation, which is not an area that you want inflammation when you're pregnant, but it does mm-hmm. bind you up and cause that constipation, which you're already probably feeling a little bit constipated.
Yeah, you don't want kind of added to, you know, unnecessarily.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. What are some other things about pregnancy multivitamins? And I guess the thing that I just want to, clarify or perhaps ask a question of you, Kate, is that I know for me, this is something I wouldn't have really understood and I still don't understand now, but, even after birth, I continue to take the multivitamins that I took during pregnancy for breastfeeding, and it even says on the on the bottle that they're for pregnancy and breastfeeding. So, do you want to talk a little bit to that point there? Because I think that's an interesting one, that you know, pregnancy multivitamins don't just kind of stop once you have the baby.
Yeah, and even some patients that I've seen have had their GP say, oh, you're kind of at that part where spina bifida is not an issue, you don't need to be taking any pregnancy multis.
Right.
Where if your diet is good, that is fine. But if you're looking for a very thriving, healthy pregnancy, taking nutrients can improve the health of your pregnancy and also of your child.
Mm.
And even their children's children. So what you're doing in utero can influence future generations through general good nutrition.
Mm.
So going into breastfeeding is a very nutritionally demanding time. Your body has just gone through a massive transformation of delivering a baby, whether that was a natural birth or it was a cesarean section.
Mm-hmm.
Both require huge amounts of vitamins and minerals to help repair all of that tissue, help to prevent infection, to help support your adrenals through the stressful stage of navigating the whole system, sleep deprivation, not to mention the hormonal changes that are happening at the same time. So it's a very intense change and very significant time in someone's life. And like I was saying before, that during breastfeeding, the mother's body gets prioritized first. So she gets all of her nutritional stores stocked up, and then whatever's left over is what gets packed into the breast milk and passed on to the baby.
Right.
So if you can keep your stores adequate, then that's the best way to get that nutrition through to your baby, because we obviously don't want to be supplementing nutrients to newborns if we don't need to.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Good to know. Were there other points about multivitamins, Kate?
Probably the only one I would say is about the processing of them.
Mm-hmm.
And just be wary of, sometimes cost can be an impactor. Most fish oils when they get the fish oils out, they don't just roll that fish like an olive and squeeze the contents out to extract the oil. They use chemicals to dissolve the flesh around that oil to extract it. And in Australia, there's not amazing standards of how pure that oil needs to be, how much of those chemicals need to be taken out. And we're talking DTTs, mercury, lead, cadmium, so some pretty serious stuff. So I'd just be making sure that if you've got a choice of fish oils on the shelf, always be choosing the most expensive if you can, because it means that these companies are going through extra processes to purify them. And if they are, they're going to be advertising it on their bottle. So be reading the back of them, looking for information, say these are pure. I don't know any brands off the top of my head because, like I said, we use practitioner only here. So I can't suggest any brands, but talking to your
practitioners about what's best
is a good idea. Yeah,
right. Because would I be right in thinking, Kate, that in terms of you know, what's on the label, that they're all going to say that they only contain fish oil, but it's about the process that the fish that is undertaken to get that fish oil out. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. It's the quality of the oils that tends to be important. Ours are all made with the really small fish from the very bottom of the ocean, and only sustainable sources. And how it works is when a fish eats another fish, it eats another fish. So the bigger the fish, the more contaminants that build up in that fish in the first place. So when companies are using big fish to get the oil, then they are more likely to be contaminated. And then if they use some cheaper forms of processing to get the oil, extract that oil, that
like can a double residue. Contamination.
Just leaves residues.
Okay.
But if a company is doing all the right things, they're gonna be advertising it because it's just extra step. So they're gonna be putting it on their packets.
Cool. Right. So good advice. Pay a lot, or probably more ideally, save your money and go and speak to a professional first, and then know that you're definitely getting the best quality that way.
Yeah. If you're not sure, fish oils can be very sensitive to oxidation as well, which means that the good fats just turn bad. It's like when you heat olive oil, it turns from a good fat to bad. So you can go to the sink, break one open, and if it smells very fishy and offensive, it's oxidized. It's not going to have all that good omega-3 left.
Okay. Interesting. I won't be rushing off to do that, but that's a good point. All right, cool. So I guess we're coming up to talking about something that I'm that we both are, which is probably why we chat so much, but around that postpartum period, you know, as we've mentioned that already, you mentioned, you know, how demanding that can be on your body, your mind, and your spirit. And you've got some information to share with us, I guess, specifically around, you know, nutritional requirements for postpartum, because it is a really crucial time. It's a time that many other cultures around the world, and, you know, cultures that exist here in Australia, and even things that perhaps some European cultures have kind of lost a little bit, but a lot of other cultures do put a lot of effort into the kind of food that new mums have. So I think you've got a lot to share with us about the nutrients for postpartum, and in particular those crucial first 6 weeks.
Yeah, the body has just undergone a massive transformation, and it requires a lot of nutrition just to heal, to start making breast milk and all of those things that I mentioned before. And then there is plenty of cultures out there that your mum and your aunties and your grandparents, they all come over and they basically lock you in a room, wrap you in cloths and tuck you into bed with your baby, so that the only thing that you have to worry about is your baby. You don't have to do any washing. You don't have to cook. They even feed them in some cases. They don't even have to feed themselves.
Yeah.
And I think it's an absolutely wonderful process to share with your family. And I know this is something that we've spoken about before, but when we get married, we choose our closest friends to be our bridesmaids, and they're there to be a bride slave. They're there to help you with every step, and they dedicate a lot of time and energy and effort to really be there by your side to make that transition easier. And it just makes me think, well, why don't we do that for pregnancy? It's a time where you need them much more, to have someone there on your side. Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it? Because I think that, you know, while we do, you know, and that's not to say that, you know, these other cultures are, you know, the be all and end all. I'm sure that there's some aspects of each individual practice that, you know, that isn't that great and things that are. But I think that, you know, one of the strong messages that I know I sort of got and that many women get during pregnancy is to, well, you know, if you go on maternity leave, spend some time freezing up some meals and putting them in the freezer because, you know, you're not going to have time to cook and things, which, you know, is great. But also, you know, on the flip side, it is a bit sad that, you know, the work that really should be done, and there's, you know, a term that's used as mothering the mother. So yeah. When mum is looking after her baby, that she's also being looked after so as that she can do that important job of mothering her baby. But, you know, I guess we don't live in an ideal world. And for me, with the women that I work with, it's about, you know, a little bit like yourself, Kate, looking at people as individuals and really hearing from them about, you know, the kinds of things that perhaps, you know, the strengths that they have available to them and some of the things that they might need support with. And I think, yeah, that postpartum time is really, if there's time that you ever need support, then that's definitely a good place to start if you can.
Yeah, it definitely takes a village, they say. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, that's one of the challenges that you have wearing being in Darwin is that a lot of people don't have family around, so that can definitely be a challenge.
Yeah. So if we think about with all of that in mind and the challenges that can come up, I guess what are your, you know, nutrition tips during this period, particularly so postpartum, but particularly that crucial 6 weeks where we know that there's so much recovery happening for the mum?
Yeah, definitely. So at this time, when the body is recovering, it does need a great deal of these nutrient support, and it really is going to impact on how you recover, and also not even for that 6 weeks, but looking into the future. Mm. So if you are planning on having more children, mm-hmm. So if you have a cesarean, what you do in those 40 days can be really important for what's the likelihood of a very healthy pregnancy next time. If you're healing better, you're going to have less complications, you might be at more of a chance of having a VBAC if that's your wish, or of having that stronger tissue integrity.
Yeah.
With complications. So it's really about helping the body heal and just adjust to what it's going through. So we do think that it is a great idea to have those pre-cooked meals ready to go. Just because sometimes you can fall into that routine of tea and toast or tea and bickies because it's something you can eat with one hand or it's quick. So having those pre-made things just in case, and if you don't need them, then that's okay. But at least anyway.
Not a bad thing to have too much food, I suppose, is it?
No. In the way of foods, the best things for postpartum are more slow-cooked meals. Things like curries and soups and stews and casseroles and risottos and these kind of things that just have this much deeper nourishing quality to them compared to raw things like salads and dishes like this. We can add lots of herbs and spices, which all have their own benefits and nutritional qualities. The meats tend to be, or your protein sources are going to be slower cooked, so they're easier to digest, easier on that gut, and less for the body to have to process. All of your nutrients are going to assimilate and get into your blood much quicker.
It's a little bit like, and I've heard this in some of the other kinds of forums and circles that around the postpartum period, but comfort food is really a good way of looking at it. You know, as you're saying, the kind of those things that we don't probably have too much of in Darwin, but yeah, like you said, the slow cooking and the, you know, those kinds of meals.
Yeah, bone broths and soups and cooking beans is also fantastic. All of that collagen and gelatin is just amazing for helping tissue repair.
Yeah, yeah.
Helping with breast milk, all of that kind of stuff, yeah.
Interesting, cool. So those are the kinds of foods that are great, and that's a really great, I guess, especially for if anybody's listening and they, you know, in the future are looking to be a helper to, you know, a newborn mum and dad for that matter too. I guess dad winds up importantly eating a lot of this food as well. These are the kinds of things that are really, you know that if you can take a freshly cooked, nice, warm, nourishing meal to a new family, then that's really setting them up well for their future.
Yeah, I think it's one of the best things you can do.
Me too.
and maybe offer to hold the baby so mum can eat it with two hands, and I think she'll be really grateful.
Lovely. And I guess that's the thing, and I don't know too much about this, and I guess it's all about that balancing act too, isn't it, Kate? Like, yes, it's great to freeze food, and it's definitely, I guess, better to have a frozen home-cooked meal than it is to, like you said, wind up eating a piece of toast or McDonald's or whatever. But I would imagine that in freezing food, does some of the nutritional quality get lost as opposed to eating it fresh? Or I'm not sure.
There will be some loss. There always is with any processing, that freezing process. The more thing that you need to be careful is how you defrost it. So just letting it defrost in the fridge or in a water bath rather than putting it in the microwave. So more than microwaving. And then so when you're reheating it, do it in the oven or in a saucepan. Don't be doing it in a microwave.
That's good. That's a good little, I guess, especially for dads too, if they're thinking about the many different ways that they are really crucial in this period. If I was a dad and heard that, but okay, well, that's one small but important, really achievable thing I can do is be a little bit organized to take the meal out but in the microwave. That's really handy tip. Cool. Is there any in terms of so supplements are still potentially useful at this point, Kate?
It depends on obviously how you birth goes and if there's things that are needed to help with any recovery there, but we just generally suggest here your multi-pregnancy that you were taking before is fine to carry on with. The major one is taking your fish oil. It needs to be a very high dose because breast milk is very high in DHA, and you want to keep passing that on to the baby because the baby's brain is still developing for that first life. So we recommend a very high dose of fish oil through that stage, and potentially probiotics as well, depending on the history, depending on the labor, depending on how baby's going, how they're feeding, how they're digesting, all of that kind of stuff, because probiotics can be a great thing that pass through the breast milk to get into the baby, but only if needed, I guess.
Yeah, for sure. And when you mentioned that, Kate, is there, because I don't know if there's an ideal way to do this or not, but in terms of probiotics, is that through mum consuming and through breast milk, or are there probiotics that can be added in some other way, shape or form to what the baby's drinking?
Yeah, both. If there's no complications, perfect labour, mum was fine, breastfeeding's established, there's no reason to give it to the baby. We just give it to the mum and it'll pass through the breast milk. If we can keep that what we call a virgin gut for the longest that we can with only breast milk entering, then that is ideal. But if the baby is born via C-section where it's not inoculated with that good flora, if either mum or baby has been given antibiotics during the labour, if the baby's really struggling with colic or wind or gas or reflux, then these are the times that we would look at, okay, it might be a good time to start supplementing the baby. And we can do that from birth, basically.
Yep. Okay. Interesting. Yeah. And like we said at the start, a lot of the information that we've gone through today, most of it is kind of, would apply to most people because it's all to do with growing a human, but not everything is going to apply to everybody. Like you said, which is really good to have an individualized approach to make sure that you're getting just the right amount, not too little, not too much kind of thing.
That's correct. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Was there any other things that you, that we've missed, Kate, in our chat today?
I think that's everything. Yeah.
Yeah, cool. Well, we did say that it was going to be short and sharp. And
only a little bit over.
Yeah, that's right. Look, thank you so much for your time today and talking about all things nutrition throughout pregnancy, the first 40 days. And also really interestingly too, you know, talking about that, the importance of really, if you can, taking an individualized approach to your multivitamins, or at least being aware of, you know, kind of what goes into the processing behind these vitamins.
Yeah.
I think it's been really insightful. Thank you.
No worries. Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. Right, we'll chat soon.
Thanks, Amanda.
Bye, Kate. Thanks for tuning into today's episode. Feel free to send me a message. I'd love to hear from you. And if there are any topics you'd like featured in future episodes, then let me know. To find out more, you can always visit www.theperinatalspace.com. Bye for now.